The No Minutes. It's the Backpack Show. Carrie, I just realized something.
What?
I had you on the wrong side. What am I going to do? The world is over. I think we should start the show over again. I don't know what to do. Hey, Coach Woodard. Good to see you. Welcome to the Backpack Show. If you are here and you are not leaving a comment, then we don't even know that you're here. You've got a comment. You've got to just say hi or something like that. Or you don't get any credit. And we know the world is built on credit.
Credit, like it's redeemable for something?
Yeah, redeemable for my love. If you want my love, you say I'm here. If you don't, then I don't even know you're here. You're gone. You're out. You're nothing
to me. It is interesting to hear people say, hey, that was a really cool show. And you're like, oh, I didn't even know you saw it.
Yeah,
Joe Polizzi. People like my hairdresser, somebody I went to school with, you know.
Joe Polizzi, who founded Content Marketing World, said that to me yesterday. He goes, man, I really love what you've been doing with the show. And then he names like three episodes. I was like, I didn't know you're here. So you... Bitches, well, say hello.
Maybe because you stop it. Don't call them that. Maybe because you call them marketing turdheads. I can't blame them for not wanting to turn up. But the Backpack Show is where you get insights about success from unusual places. So, Chris, who do we have today?
Wow, have we got some wonderful, exciting people to talk to today. We have Esther Wallace. She's going to talk about Playa Society. We're going to talk about her career in sports and how she wants to get more women into sports. I love that she has a really cool shirt that I would wear if I could get away with it. It's got the word female and then crossed out and just says athlete. Except in mine, I would just cross out athlete as well. it would work. And then we have Christine Whitmarsh, who is on because she's a writer. She's a circus performer. She does all these things. It's kind of ridiculous. But
she
asked her
host the Your Daily Writing Habit podcast.
That thing. And I had her on because I want to talk about memoirs. I want to talk about what it takes to write memoirs because certain people like my biological father, I sure would like to get some more information out of him. Bitches say hello. Hey, Kate, good to see you. Carl said hello. I wouldn't have known Carl was here if he hadn't said hello.
Hello, Carl.
So I think we got to get the Carl. I think we got to get this show going, don't we?
Hi, everyone. Tim Kitzer from NBA Jam and NFL Blitz. Welcoming you to The Backpack Show. Your hosts, Chris Brogan, Kerry Gorgone, Boom Shakalaka.
Backpack Show.
You've got to understand, when people say yes to us to be on the show, most of the time they don't really understand what they're saying yes to. You know, there's no way Esther Wallace was like, oh, those guys, oh, they're great. We know them. I could trust them. I feel totally confident that they're going to represent me as an important and useful person in the world and society. But she said yes. So now she's ours to torture for a bit. How delightful.
We get to learn from her about success and distill her success story into lessons you can use to recreate your own success in life.
That's the big goal, right? We're going to pick her brain, get some wisdom, get some knowledge. So I'm going to drag Esther out first because I'm going to have to ask a lot of memoir questions. So I've got this figured out. Okay. Esther Wallace, Playa Society. How the heck are you?
Hey, I'm doing good. I'm great. How are you?
Good. What part of the planet are we saying hi from right now today?
The cold part. Well, I guess a lot of parts are cold. Boston.
Hey, right down the street. Right down the street. I'm in the northern part of the state, so you woke up to like 12 degrees shenanigans. Like,
yeah, it was 7 degrees in my neck of the woods.
Good lordy. Wow. So Playa Society came about. You're an athlete first. You went up through the ranks. I think you played net throw the ball cabal or something, right? Is that the one? You're a basketball player.
Not a sports person, Chris.
I know, but Larry Bird, something, something. So you played basketball for a bit. What was your, how far did you go? What'd you do? What was a good part of it? And then what made you say, you know what? I'd like to have some more friends on this team. And then you said, I think I'll start this business.
So I started playing basketball when I was 15. So I was a sophomore in high school. I was pretty late.
Wow.
I was an art nerd first.
Nice.
And then I started playing basketball because I'm 6 feet. I'm 6'1". So everybody kept telling me to play. And one day I just decided to try, fell in love with it, and earned a Division I scholarship in 2 years, played 4 years of college, then I played 1 year overseas and coached a little bit overseas as well, ended my career early because of some health reasons, and then entrepreneurship was the next best thing, so I started working on creating this business.
So when people say overseas, it could be anywhere. Like you could have just gone to like the New Jersey of overseas. Where'd you go?
It probably is the New Jersey of overseas. I went to Durham, England, which is, very different than London, England. It's like 6 hours and it's right outside, 6 hours from London and it's right outside of Scotland. And yeah, it's a quiet town.
Not exactly, you know, the Boston scene. Now, where are you from originally? Are you a Boston person originally?
I'm from Springfield, so basketball fame, right around there. Yep.
Got it. That's a certain neck of the woods. That's where the Six Flags is and all that sort of stuff as well. So what made us start with this really iconic product of the athlete without the female chucked into it?
So, I mean, I always tell people it was instinct. I mean, I didn't really, you know, when I was playing basketball, I was focused on playing basketball and winning and all of that. So you kind of like tune everything else out. But once I was nearing the end of my career, I started to think about like why I didn't play basketball sooner. Like, why did I start playing when I was 15 instead of 6, like a lot of normal journeys. And I thought about how I never saw women in sports really celebrated and represented growing up. So it kind of just played on the idea of like all athletes being treated, you know, having that equal opportunity and equal access to be great, no matter what, if you're male or female.
you want to bring more female athletes into sports. Mm-hmm. So how are you working to do that to make sure that other little girls do see mm-hmm. female athletes?
Well, for me, the number one way is really just like celebrating what we're doing. You know what I mean? So that girls are watching and seeing that. And it's about building up that confidence and dismantling some of that stigma that shouldn't really exist anyway. So it's creating a space where we feel comfortable and we have ways to like, you know, express our identity and celebrate ourselves as women in sports. And, you know, hopefully the girls are watching us. But then there's so many people that are doing work on the other side as far as creating those opportunities and access. So I do look to partner with them and find different creative ways to collaborate in the space.
Do you need to get that?
Are they calling from the past?
It's honestly the fax machine, which never goes off. So it's really weird. You have a fax machine?
You're so next level.
This is not her space.
No.
This is not your space. So one thing I saw was a coloring book. You mentioned you had a career before the career as an art person, which is one of the reasons why you didn't get in sports. Is that your art in our coloring book?
Yes. So I call that like my pandemic/quarantine project. It was one of those things where I found myself just drawing and it was calming and kind of relaxing over the 2020. And that was the result of that.
So I did now just read Esther Williams drew these. So I was like, oh, I didn't have to ask that question. But one thing I also noticed is you drew 23. Is that a Michael Jordan 23? Is that a I'm sick of drawing 23? What made us 23?
So it's 23 athletes and a total of 24 pages. I think I stopped at, I wanted 24 pages, more so for Kobe. It just, and also I kind of got maxed out when it came to drawing. I was kind of at the end of my rope, so I was like, this is a good place to stop.
Did you find that you were able to bring any skills from coaching over into running your own business?
For sure. I try to, and sometimes this can be good or bad, but I try to kind of mirror a lot of what happened on the basketball court for me or as an athlete in how I approach business and entrepreneurship, for sure.
So how do you bring out the best in somebody who's maybe like you see potential in them, but they haven't done whatever it is you need them to do before?
Well, I think that I'm in a space and of course there's different like different industries and different spaces. And I think I happen to be in a space where nothing's written. There's no blueprint to how to execute or how to do anything. Right. Anybody can kind of create something and make it good or make it sell or make it cool, right? And so I try to bring out the best in like teammates or other people that I'm working with by reminding them that they can be the expert and they don't necessarily have to listen to what other experts who give themselves that title tell them is gonna work or is gonna be good. You kind of create your own path and find your own way. That's how I became a basketball player, right? And then that's how I became a coach. So I do fully believe in trusting your instincts and, you know, being more one of those players that kind of creates opportunities to score or to win and do the same thing in entrepreneurship, create the opportunity to be successful.
There's a Black Women Winning is a Revolutionary Act is another great piece of your work. And Did that come to you? Is that somebody else's quote and I just don't know that and I'm being ignorant, but, or is that you?
I'm pretty sure it's me. Sometimes you think of things and you're like, does this exist already? I didn't find it when I like Googled it. So I was like, I think I can claim this.
It's yours. It's all you. I just didn't want you to be like, you know, are you idiot? Maya Angelou said that, you know, 1984. I'd be like, yeah. Oh, so that's cool. How does that process work for you? How do you decide, you know, how do you decide you have enough clothes? Maybe that's all you ever need to make for Play-Doh Society for a while. Whereas other people are like all about the drop and they're always dropping new stuff. What's your process and your mindset about how that goes?
I think I'm still at the stage where, the process is a little chaotic. So I actually was working full time. So this is the start of year 4 for Play-Doh Society. And I was working full time for 2.5 years while I was getting started. So when you're kind of doing so many different things, you kind of have to like take those great moments. Like if you have a great idea or a great design, you kind of have to take it and run with it when you get it. So that's kind of the path that I was on. It was like this great idea would come. So I would have to like rush to put it out or make sure that I had the time to put it out. And it kind of, there wasn't really any method to the madness there. So now that the strategy is coming in, now I quit my job right before the pandemic, my full-time job, to become a full-time entrepreneur. And so now that strategy is coming along where I have to get a little bit more refined and say, okay, I want to have this many SKUs on the shelf. And, you know, this is how much my fulfillment center can manage. So I do have to kind of pull back a little bit now.
SKUs, like those little scannable thingies that are on shopping items, right?
Yeah, and they tell you how many, like each different design has its own SKU. So I don't want to have like 100 different designs to manage, right? So like maybe 10 at a time or 5 at a time, something like that.
When you decided to create your own business, how did you build your team for that? Like, is that sort of like putting together a sports team where you need people in certain roles or do you need people that can play multiple positions? Like, what was your approach to that?
Well, again, one of the things that I really learned and I think has been really helpful is understanding how you want to approach building your team. And for me, the best approach has been building with flexibility in mind, right? So I'm not at the point where I'm hiring people for what the end goal is or what the end vision is. I'm hiring people kind of more on a temporary kind of contract basis as the brand is evolving. Because especially with the way things have changed over the last year or so, right? Everything has become digital, right? Everything is digital. There's really not an opportunity to be face-to-face, right? So imagine if I had hired full-time employees that were just all meant to be face-to-face sales representation or something like that, right? So being very flexible in that sense and understanding how the digital world is evolving as far as marketing and content creation and all of that. But ultimately, honestly, again, I go back to the coaching and the basketball side of things. I look for great teammates, like the people who are going to cheer you on the bench. No matter who's winning on the team, they're excited about like the overall goal. We're all working towards that same purpose. We all kind of support each other and we're all growing and excited together.
We had Alila on the show yesterday, the founder of Ascot Manor, which is like a tennis brand. Mm-hmm. And one of the things she does is try to kind of matchmake between sponsors and up and coming athletes. Do you think that might be something you'd ever get involved in? Or like, how would you like to support young women who maybe have talent, but haven't considered sports as a serious option for getting college scholarships and other things?
You know, I think, again, there's a couple pieces to it because I think because of social media and the digital world, there's so many opportunities for people to create more spaces for whatever they want, essentially. And I think in women's sports, that's one of the areas where we're creating. So what we didn't have, what women my age didn't have growing up, we're starting to create that and just create those spaces, right? So it's really about visibility. It's about representation and all of that. Of course, there's the other layers of access, reducing costs, reducing some of those barriers. So I think it really takes a team and it takes a village. So a bunch of people working at it from different sides. And so I hope to be working at it from that side of visibility and then collaborating and working with a lot of those other players that are on the field.
Who are some of the people on your team that inspired you?
Wow. So there's a lot of people that I've had the chance to interact with. I can't necessarily claim that they're on Team Player Society officially, but I've had so much support from women in the WNBA that I grew up watching, that I learned how to play basketball from them, right? I was in a place, despite Springfield, Massachusetts being the birthplace of basketball, I actually grew up here and, you know, my father was from Jamaica, right? He did not play sports, definitely didn't play basketball. So I didn't have people in my life that could really teach me how to play basketball. I had to watch like YouTube videos or whatever it might be of all these players. And now they're the women who are in the WNBA who are, you know, wearing my t-shirt or, you know, giving me shout outs or sending me DMs and just hyping me up. And it feels quite amazing to experience that. I would say a lot of the WNBA players, and then players in the women's soccer league and the women's hockey league.
So I'm usually known for asking questions that get me in trouble after the fact, but here we go. I'm going to ask one of them. You have so many attractive models. How do you keep getting so many nice looking people to model yourself? Look at that man. He's almost Michael B. Jordan-ish.
Like, they actually just got engaged. I contributed to
so
that.
He's
I
off think the market. You did.
So I can't inquire about him now. School. Now I get it. Oh, see how you are? I thought Carrie wasn't going to be able to touch the buttons because she's afraid her entire
setup would
fall.
It's really hard. It's a sacrifice.
So I didn't get a real yellow card. I got the old yellow card. All right. No, you have, and when I went to your Instagram, it is full of very beautiful people. And I was just like, how do you get that done? You just know that many attractive people?
I have no idea, honestly. I think they must be attracted to the design or the shirt. And then, I don't know, maybe it just all kind of falls.
Just hang out like
you don't
weird...
know many attractive people, Chris. Right here in the comments, I've seen plenty of attractive people.
There's plenty of attractive people around me, but my golly. Okay, so... Player Society, we can go and learn all kinds of stuff. Esther Wallace, stick around if you can. We've got to bring you back near the very end. But, oh, boy, did we learn a bunch. Very attractive, though. All right, listen.
You talking about her Instagram?
Everybody. Still? Instagram, all the things. But Instagram, okay. Like, you just get lost in it. There's pro ballers in there with her shirts on. Who is this woman?
Oh, wow. I ran cross country because I wanted a sport I could play by myself.
It's a good way to do it.
Like you're on a team, but you don't have to, like, deal with people.
Look, I totally blew it about the ads again, so let's do it. PubSite, you're sponsored by PubSite. So if you're an author like Christine Whitmarsh and you have 85,000 ebooks and you help other people make 85,004, you should throw up a website to be a good author, and it'll only take you a couple hours. It'll just be done. Pub-site.com. Take all the guesswork out of making an author site.
So after this, Esther, when you write a memoir, get your website, pub-site.com.
Right. Do you like sausage? Who doesn't? Johnsonville, baby. We still have just a little bit of Johnsonville left in the
train.
Sausage
train is leaving the station soon.
Hoot, hoot. So send an email to carrie@chrisbrogan.com if you want free sausage. All you got to do is give me a video back. That's all you got to do. A video
of you doing something with the sausage, not just like...
Something food-like with the sausage.
Yeah, not playing basketball.
Don't be weird. Want to make your own show? You want to get people like very busy Esther Wallace on your show? Go to cbrogan.me/StreamYard. You can make a show just like this. It's so
coached overseas.
Easy.
There's got to be so many stories.
That's, oh my gosh. But England.
The show.
Who plays hoops in England? Nobody plays hoops in England.
They must be very polite.
Footy.
Pardon me. I'm going to
pip.
Pick that ball.
We have a podcast because someone made us. That's why there's Peapods there. Castos is a podcast hosting platform. It is so easy to use. I have, for all the years that I've had a podcast, used Libsyn, Liberated Syndication. I still highly recommend that organization. However, I wanted to launch one with my buddy Matt. I put it on Castos. It runs like a dream. Castos.com. This
That's
backpack
lovely.
Show. Shush. This backpack show is sponsored
you
by
shut
the
up. You talked about her Instagram for like 10 minutes.
I loved her Instagram. Get.online. Get.online. Let me finish. Okay. Get.online. You can do one of these things. But listen to me. If you want a .online domain, so if you want chipgriffin.online, it's 90% off for the first year with my code. Use the code Chris, all caps, 90% off. So cbrogan.me/online, you can get your own online show, just like the website, just like the backpack show .online. So I don't know, maybe Christine wants to throw a podcast up on that. .online, 90% off.
That's a massive. Code.
It's not a bad code, right? 90. Don't be weird. I hit the wrong button. Don't be weird. If we use StreamYard, does our show have to be just like this one? It would be better if it weren't. Children, don't make me come over there. Do I have to turn this show around? yellow card of both of you kids. All right. I'm going to grab Christine Whitmarsh. I want Christine here just because I want to talk about memoirs. She does all of this stuff, but of them, I just wanted to talk about memoirs. So,
you know. How Coach Woodard's like, I'm going to turn this car around.
No question. So, Christine, how the heck are you? Thanks for coming on.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm awesome. Oh, and I just made up a title for Esther's future memoir.
Okay, go.
Black Women Winning, subtitle, Inspiring Revolutionary Acts.
I like it.
Write it down.
Write it in the old dream journal, Esther. Black Women Winning, Inspiring Revolutionary Acts. It's big.
You can see Esther backstage. I think she is writing it down. So that's the thing. Yeah. We sometimes forget to tell guests that we can see you backstage. We just can't hear you. And so we see the really interesting things. But so, Esther, we can see you. Not that you're doing anything inappropriate, but just, you know, FYI.
Put the gun down. Christine Whitmarsh, you and I were talking about something absolutely unrelated to anything in particular on Twitter. And that's when I was like, wait a minute. We have to talk about memoirs. So I have two parents who I would love to see a memoir out of, you know, and they're, you know, not book authors, but they can write. They're handy with a pen. What gets somebody to start a memoir? What's the process? Where does one even start? I always think of Steve Martin in The Jerk. I was born a poor black child. You know, like, where do we start a memoir?
Well, that's a great question. And I'm a fan of development because I found over the years, and I've been doing this, my gosh, for like 20, 21 years now, I have found that a lot of people, especially first-time authors, they think that they can just kind of write an entire book based on a table of contents scribbled on a Post-it. Mm. And I equate that to kind of like, you know, just not even hitting the quarter line on your gas tank and thinking that you're going to drive from New York to LA. Like, it's not going to work to write an entire book. So I'm a huge fan of a pretty thorough development process. I've even actually invented something called a book blueprint that takes an author through creating their vision and figuring out who their audience, their ideal audience for their blueprint is. And, you know, really what those people are looking for, especially in a book, and really what you're promising them. And then from there, taking the architecture, whatever. So it's an 8-week process I take people through. I think that's like kind of, you know, something people might not know is that it does take a little bit of work to put a memoir together. A really good one anyway.
What's the difference between other types of writing and writing a memoir, Christine? Like, what makes that type of writing different?
A memoir is really cool because you get to be sneaky. It's almost like a novel. There's actually a quote by Susan Cheever that says the memoir is the 21st century novel because you get to be like really creative novel wise, but then you get to slide in, you know, great stories about yourself. And especially if you're my client, a lot of messages and lessons and things that can really transform the lives of other people. So it's like a sneaky way of writing a novel and teaching at the same time. Because if you just teach, I always say, if you just like write, you know, the self-help book, you're shooting all over people because you should do this and you should do that. But without story, it's really not grounded in anything. So it's a really great way of, you know, telling a story almost, you know, like you would write a novel, but putting all your kind of life stuff in there.
Depending how exciting your life is, it can seem like a novel. We had, Carmen Verrier on earlier this week to talk about The Butcher Shop Girl. And she's like, she worked in her mother's slaughterhouse, then went away to be an international exotic dancer and had to get rescued from the cartel. She
in Bolivia.
Yeah, it was insane. And I was like, wait, this is a memoir? So, you know, I mean, my memoir would be a lot more like settled down. But so do you ever find that there's some confusion if you like, there might be a temptation to make your life sound cooler than it is. So how do you talk people down from that?
I usually have the opposite issue with my clients where a lot of people don't realize how cool their life is, especially if they didn't, you know, grow up in a slaughterhouse and jump off of cliffs and do all this other stuff. I mean, I do have clients that have done really amazing things, but for me, the challenge is more convincing people that they have an exciting life and, you know, really drawing out the lessons, especially, you know, some of my favorite lessons to draw out is, you know, the dark places that you've faced in life, because you wouldn't believe how incredibly helpful and transformational and inspirational those things are. Those lessons that you've learned that maybe you've kind of put behind you where it's like, yeah, that was like, you know, crap that I went through, but you know, there's stuff that you learn that someone who's going through that now, actually they need to know it right now. So I don't usually have to talk people down as much as talk people up.
Interesting. So in the process of doing this, do you, you know, the whole kill your darlings thing, and you know, you have to leave a bunch of things on the floor and all that sort of a thing. Do you find when people are working on memoirs, do they put too many ideas together or do they have too few ideas? What's sort of the average of your experience when you're working with your clients?
When people come to me, probably too much. Well, they just don't really know. They don't really know an angle. And again, I'm so in love with memoirs as an art form. And the beautiful thing about a memoir is you get to choose one angle. I like compare it to, you know, when I'm differentiating between a biography and a memoir, a biography is more like the three camera sitcom, old sitcom television format. And a memoir is the one movie camera. So you're choosing one specific narrative angle. So you get to be really creative about that. So it's like, I have kind of like a beautiful mind thing that I compare it to when people come to me and they just tell me all the things about their life. And not that I like specifically start taping up pieces of paper all over the wall and look for patterns, but it kind of works like that, where I'm trying to find the exact creative angle. And the great thing about a memoir is you don't need to do it once. You can write several different memoirs about your life, you know, hitting all the different angles.
Who do you recommend for memoirs? I want to say something first. One of my favorite memoirs got debunked because it turned out there may or may not have been some fictitious parts of it. James Frey, A Million Little Pieces. Yeah. He kind of famously made Oprah pretty mad. Like, don't make Oprah mad. Like, I'm trying to think of people to not make mad. Oprah's one of them.
Yeah.
But I always say, it's a belief I've always had, is like, never let the truth get in the way of a great story. And I feel that way even about a memoir. So I love the book still, but I would always probably have to, you know, preface by saying some of these facts aren't exactly factual.
They're alternative facts.
There you go. That works fine in 2016. Who's a good memoir that you like to recommend to people?
I read more of, well, all of my clients that are behind me on the show. But just top of mind for me, I just read a book by William Zinsser. He was the guy that wrote On Writing Well, and he wrote a fantastic book about memoir. So I'm like the type that reads, and it was really cool because he wrote a book about how to write a memoir as a version of his memoir, which is exactly how you should do it. Yeah.
Liars Club by Mary Roach. Was not Mary Roach, Mary Carr. Liars Club, that's one of the ones that comes to mind. And then after that, I'm going to fail. But
yeah.
Did you write your own memoir first and then become... Did you write your own memoir first and then become like a memoir writing expert? Or were you already one and then thought, I should write my own?
The second one. Because for years, yeah, people were telling me, where's your memoir? So it's like, where's your business card? So I finally... And it took me... It's one of those things where I had to learn how to walk in my client's footsteps and in their shoes. And it was all the challenges that they've been telling me about. Like, what if this isn't interesting? Is anybody, I don't even know which angle, all the like literally everything that a client has ever told me about how they're challenged writing a memoir, I dealt with. I was like, but. So, you know, thankfully I had some help with mine. I got some help with the book blueprint portion of mine from someone who used to work for me. And she knew me well enough where she was just kind of laughing because I'm just like, yeah, I'm saying everything my clients have ever said to me. This is great. But it was very valuable to learn what it is to be in their shoes.
You have a lot more empathy for them.
Yeah, a lot more.
Where do you get stalled? Like, where do you decide? So in my book writing process, I get about 130 pages in and I throw it away. And then I start a new book and that usually gets finished. So I've thrown over 900 pages away at this point. So Seth Godin said lots of swear words to me when he found that out. Where do people get stalled in the memoir, which is a little different, I would imagine, than a typical business book?
I talked to Seth Godin once. That's interesting. We both started, he started as a ghostwriter as well. They get stalled in, you know, various places. It's just like kind of like obstacles that I can predict. But just to go to your point, if you had a book blueprint, you might not be throwing away all these pages, Chris, because you would have, that's one of the reasons for it. So that when you get towards the end of the process, I would say, or, you know, middle to end, when it's all of a sudden, you know, not as shiny and new and exciting anymore, you can, you can go back to the blueprint, especially the huge part of the blueprint that I like is the why. Like, why am I writing this book? Whether it's for professional, personal, the thing that really energetically connects you to the core of your book idea. Having that, you know, later on, especially, you know, in addition to that, having the plan. So when you get to, you know, chapter 12, 13, you go to the blueprint and say, why was I excited about chapter 12 7 months ago? And you go to the blueprint and say, oh yeah, chapter 12 is awesome. I'm so psyched about this. So for me, that's the number one tool to reconnect my authors to their why and also to their plan and to their original vision and to their readers and all the things that you need to drive you through, like to put the gas in the tank and get out from New York to LA. That's, for me, that's the blueprint.
So what powers the success of a memoir? Is it the fact that people are already interested in the author, or is it that it's a really interesting story about no one you've ever heard of, or is it some combination of the two?
I find it's the universal life stories. And you know, biography is, you know, biographies and memoirs are consistently some of the highest ranking type of genres in book sales, because people are super fascinated by other people's life stories, and not just famous people, like ordinary people. It doesn't even matter to them. I have this as proof because my clients have this great habit of forwarding me their fan mail and sending me their Amazon reviews. And I love seeing what people are saying about their stories, because I'm like my client's first fan. It's like, well, I've known that you're awesome for like a year now. So it's really great that the rest of the world is catching on with this. But people love the universal, like they're able to see themselves in someone's life stories and their life challenges and their life lessons and say, oh yeah, oh my God, this person is just like me. Even if the details aren't really parallel, it's like, it's really funny how, you know, people, I think it was Elizabeth Gilbert. She talked about, she was doing a book signing and a fan came up to her and said, oh, that part, in, you know, where you said this, and she rattled off this whole life experience. And Elizabeth Gilbert's like, okay, I never wrote about that. That never happened to me. But it was like one little tidbit that she wrote about in her book that the person obviously connected to their life story. And they somehow hallucinated that she talked about that in their book. So people really love connecting other people's lives to their own.
In the process of looking through my books, just to see, like, not my books I've written, my books that I read, memoir is pretty high up there. I read a lot from the military community. A lot of special operators have come out with books, and it's an interesting group, because with special operators compared to the big military, they're a lot like entrepreneurs. They have to make a lot of judgments on the fly. They have a lot of, you know, judgment calls that get questioned massively afterwards, which is a lot like entrepreneurship. And in the process, what I find is that the thing I keep seeking and needing in memoirs is vulnerability. Do you find people have a really tough time letting themselves be vulnerable?
Sometimes they do, yes. And even the ones that believe that they are vulnerable, I always manage to coax them to new levels, because that really is the magic. And that really is, you know, when readers are reading it and saying, oh my God, this person understands my life, it's when they're truly vulnerable. So, you know, that definitely is a challenge for people, but I have a way of getting them to levels they didn't know they were going to go to.
How long does it take to take that journey with someone? So you mentioned doing the blueprint with the client, mm-hmm. and how many weeks that takes, but the whole process, like beginning to end, to from am I even interesting to getting the memoir out there, about how long?
It's about a year by the time you get through all the editing and, you know, all the things that come with publishing. Yeah.
And how much if you tack on do something interesting first?
Oh, do something interesting. Well, you've already done something interesting. I'll find it. Okay. I'm gonna find something interesting, detective. I got it.
That's interesting to me, because some people haven't, have they? I mean, do you ever just find somebody and you're like, no, you're just boring? I'm sure you're lovely, but boy, are you boring.
Like, return the deposit.
I think money. they don't make it past the first, you know, sales call with me. Like, okay. You know, I'm very selective about people I pick. There's very few boring people. I know I'm like Pollyanna about memoirs here, but there's very few truly boring people on this planet. They just might be hiding maybe behind a wall of predictable and boring, or whatever they have to present to the world. But no, I can pick away and find something cool.
We've got some people right in the comments section that should have memoirs, like Coach Woodard should have a memoir. Your parents, Chris, although I don't know if you would love that.
Oh, I'd be so into their part of the memoir, not my part of the memoir. I think the Kate Colgan story would be fascinating to me. I've got a sense that some of Christine's fans would have some pretty good writings in there. Andrea Mason, Sherry Barge.
That's my yoga teacher is Andrea Mason. She's my wonderful awesome yogi. Yeah. I need the yoga to calm the brain down, you know.
If you leave memoir for a while and you decide you're going to go work on some other kind of a book, what's something else you like to write on?
Oh, I've written a lot of business books too. So just, you know, the all-purpose kind of, I know it's a cliche, like the thought leader, like the big idea books. I really enjoy those. Those are mostly my ghostwriting clients. I would say memoirs are mostly my book coaching clients, and ghostwriters are I got the big world changing needle moving idea clients.
Gotcha. Yeah. And you, we talked briefly, so briefly backstage, and I think I saw this in like one of your tweets or something about your circus work. Can you talk just a minute about that?
Yeah. Well, a few years ago, and I'm like totally okay disclosing my age. At the age of 44, yes, I'm going to be 48 next month. The age of 44, and most people don't do this at 44. I wasn't the exercise person or whatever. I just was completely bored by going to the gym, which talk about like relating to universal things. How many people can relate to bored going to the gym? And I'd just been like on and off the workout roller coaster for years. And I realized that one of my core values is fun. And that had a lot to do with it. So I needed something that was going to get my attention. And it was funny because I was at a business speech by a very, like, you know, PhD psychologist and, you know, best-selling author. And I thought they're a very serious person out there in the world of being serious. And I like to check out people's Instagrams after I meet them to see what's up. So I expected it to be her doing very serious PhD psychologist author things on her Instagram. And it was like serious author thing, trapeze, serious author thing, trapeze. And I had coffee with her. I was like, what's up with this? And she's like, oh, there's a circus school here. I'm in Jacksonville Beach, Florida. She says, there's a circus school here. You should try it. I'm like, well, I will just be very candid. I was at my heaviest weight and most out of shape of my entire life at that point. So I was considering like strolling on the beach with a dog who's like asleep at my feet here, as you know, that was high performance exercise. Andrea's awesome. And I have all my circus friends watching. So I was just, I was just like, yeah, I'm sure I can just go from strolling on the beach to, you know, Cirque du Soleil. Yeah, no problem. And it was quite an uphill climb, but the reason I kept at it is because it's just like the most fun thing ever. So it really cured my whole, I'm sick of going to the gym. I'm bored with the gym. So I need something that will hold my attention. Well, I will tell you, the circus arts, the aerial arts, you will never be bored with exercise again. So that's how I get into it. And I love every minute of it. It's never like I have to work out. I have to train. I have to go to circus. It's like, can I get in the car now for tomorrow? I'm that excited about this.
What do you do for beginners? Like if you walk in there and it's day one, where do they start you? Like what's the bunny slope for circus?
You just swing on a swing.
That was me. It took three teachers to basically hoist my butt onto the trapeze for the photo op in the introductory class. I was a disaster. I had no muscle. I was just a big bowl of jelly on the floor. So anybody can do circus. I mean, when people are just like, oh, I'm not strong enough, I don't have upper body strength, I'm like, I started with nothing. And then, you know, related to my power of the curve, which you saw the little, you know, curved spine on the cover of my memoir, I have severe scoliosis where I had 116 degrees of scoliosis corrected with Harrington rods to, I now have 67 degrees curve. So I have a back health, a 44 years old, overweight, never, you know, was not exercising, out of shape, and my back is held together by titanium. If I can do circus, anybody can do circus.
That's a big layout for that. That's a big way for making people feel it and accept that. I love that. I think it's a great requirement. I'm grabbing Esther back. Esther Wallace, yeah. We're going to talk the bunch of you. I'm just curious, Esther, what did you think about this, especially finding out that your co-guest is a person who also does aerial work in the circus?
Yeah, definitely surprising. I've never heard that one before. So
I feel like it'd be a great fit for you though.
Yeah.
Because you're already strong. Yeah.
You'd be a great aerial athlete.
The funny thing is I never did anything but basketball. And surprisingly, you would think I would be an athlete across maybe multiple sports, but I tried volleyball once. I tried to learn to swim, not as successful as basketball.
You're an artist who could throw the ball around a little bit. Yeah, that's what you're saying.
Yeah, we'll say that.
I get you.
And you could write a memoir. Just saying.
Now you got your memoir title.
I know who to call.
Well, so that makes a question. Christine, I'll start with you. What's your identity first? Are you an author first? Are you an aerialist first? Are you a person with scoliosis first? What are you first?
I am a storyteller because everything you just listed are variations of my story.
And Esther, how about you?
I would say I'm a creative. That's what runs through my blood.
Just got to be creative. Got to get out there, make it look, feel, and sound like the way it should. Mm-hmm. All right. We're at this part of the show where we have to do a person of the day, and I was not actually ready to do that. So.
Oh, and here's our person of the day. Kaboom!
I feel like I should, I was thinking about this. I think I'm going to give it to my new yoga instructor friend, Andrea Mason. So she's here for Christine. So why not? I think she's a good one.
Do you barter? Is it like, I'll get 6 yoga classes and you'll get 8 a weeks book. Of memoir coach? Yeah.
No, we're all doing all the business things, supporting each other's business. She's also she does circus with me. She's also one of my Lyra instructors and my aerial yoga instructor. So Andrea is very, very much circus. Not just yoga.
Oh my gosh.
You're just trying a bunch of stuff because you're going to write another memoir. You're like, I'm going to try like 16 new things.
Oh yeah. I mean, I have a client who has 3 Emmys and 3 books. You can do different variations of your memoirs however many times you want.
See, Esther? So you can have like a player coach one, and then you can have another for your business. Mm-hmm. And a third for all the stuff that we don't even know about.
All the stuff we haven't even dug into yet. So we're at this part of the show where we talk about the backpack. The backpack question is, what goes in your backpack? The world's crazy right now. There's shifting sands. We don't even know what's coming next. It's all up in the air. There's nothing we could have predicted the last couple of years. We certainly can't guess where we're going next. So you can't bring everything with you, but you can bring a few things. So you could bring something physical. You could bring something metaphorical. Carrie, what's a great example of something physical?
Extra set of teeth.
DJ Cumberbun said an extra set of teeth. So
I used to carry an extra doorknob, I swear to God, because one of my friends had a doorknob that came off and like you had to put it on the outside. And if they forgot and the door closed, they like couldn't get back in. And I'm like, you used to make fun of me for carrying an extra doorknob, but damn, if it wasn't useful.
That is crazy town. Sometimes Carrie, it's something metaphorical. It could be something like hope or fear or, I don't know, courage. What's something that goes in the backpack that's metaphorical?
Fearlessness, Carrie. Vulnerability, resilience.
Yes, potato chips.
I mean, I could go on, but let's hear from Esther and from
Christine. Esther Wallace, what are you going to stick in the backpack today?
I think I'll stick my favorite intangible trait, which is resourcefulness. Mm. And I think you packs a big punch because you get a lot out of it when you're able to be flexible and adapt. You know, just being like, you know, if you only have a twig and lighter fluid, what are you going to do with it? You know what I mean? So I think that that's very useful to be resourceful and figure out different ways to use different tools.
I like that answer a whole heck of a lot.
Yeah.
What do you have, Ink Whitmarsh? What do you have to throw in
I got three things. Well, I don't go anywhere without a notebook and a pen. So I need like a 5-subject notebook and a pen. And that gives me all the metaphorical things through my stories so I can make up all the traits I need. And I need my juggling balls because I need to stay connected to circus.
I like it. Juggling balls is a new one. That's a pretty good one.
When do you graduate to like torches?
Yeah, or clues.
Oh, I know the people that do those. Oh my goodness. Yeah. No.
That's like year three of circus school. Like when you get there.
The juggling is really the thing that turns this overactive creative brain off. The juggling, it's really hard because you're not focusing on anything. So that's like one of my forms of meditation in addition to actual meditation.
I'd be like one of those cartoons you go dunk, dunk, dunk because I wouldn't.
Use the soft ones.
I'm here for it. A lot of comments about the fact that you wandered around with a doorknob, Carrie. That was news.
I didn't wander around. I knew someone who sometimes needed one.
Well, I would say that, you know, that's even more resourceful. My grandmother almost always brought a bottle opener with her. I think she just kind of always had a plan that there may or may not be a beverage. Like, for instance...